There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
It's 3 o'clock somewhere. Time for a My Mochi ice cream snack. My Mochi ice cream is cool, creamy scoops of premium ice cream wrapped in sweet, pillowy dough. And get this, all of My Mochi's fabulous flavors like strawberry, mango, double chocolate, and cookies and cream are only around 80 calories per piece. Talk about a guilt-free, indulgent experience. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned, gluten-free mochis that are great for grab-and-go. So feel good while curbing your afternoon cravings or the midnight munchies. Yeah, you know who you are with the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream. Find My Mochi ice cream at Target or visit MyMochi.com to locate a grocery store near you.
Hey guys, Nerdist Podcast episode number 241. Check out the Nerdist channel on YouTube, youtube.com/Nerdist. Recently put up a video of Bill Nye teaching me how to tie a bow tie to celebrate the fact that Bill Nye is coming to the Nerdist channel. Also shows from Neil deGrasse Tyson and Neil Patrick Harris. Two Neils. Cop Skyrim is a show that I'm excited about. All-Star Celebrity Bowling is coming back soon. And you might go, well, why do I need to subscribe to that? Because, number one, it helps us, just quite honestly, if you subscribe. And it helps us to support this whole initiative so we can keep making more stuff. And then also, it just lets you know what's coming down the pipeline. And then you don't have to just guess or wait until someone tells you, like, oh, look at this thing. So go over to youtube.com/nerds and click subscribe. Please. Please, I don't want to be your annoying friend, but please. Now I'd like to dial back some of the annoyingness to thank Hover.com for supporting this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. Hover's domain management that is simple. There's email tools. There are live tech support that if you are setting up your domain and you have a question, you can call them Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern. You actually get a live person not going to put you on hold. They also can get you premium domains. These are just commonly used words that might drive a lot of traffic to your site by virtue of the fact that you own, like dragons.com. So they will help you find those types of domains. They're going to cost you a little bit more, but it'll be worth it as you bask in the glory of your accelerated traffic rate. But if you need a standard, non-premium domain, we have an offer code for you for Hover.com. Use the offer code Nerdist when you go to Nerdist.Hover.com. Get 10% off your non-premium domain. They can't discount premium domains. I'm sorry. But you will not care because of the level of service you will get from Hover.com, who I thank for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, which is Thomas Jane, who I've been a fan of. I mean, fucking Deep Blue Sea. That is a movie that every time it's on cable, I watch the shit out of that movie. If it just comes on, I'm like, oh, I gotta watch this movie. Do you like Deep Blue Sea?
Yeah, it's a really good movie.
Fucking amazing.
Yeah, Thomas Jane is great.
And I loved Hung, and yeah. And that Punisher fan film that he made was awesome. He's got a Kickstarter going on right now for the Bad Planet game. So if you go over to Kickstarter and search Bad Planet or Thomas Jane, check it out. It's support it, get it made. Thomas is, I mean, I didn't really know a lot about Thomas before this episode, but he really is a guy who just... he has an idea, he wants to make it, so he just goes and makes it himself. You know, I mean, like, he really... The more kind of famous people that kind of adopt that as a model, I think the better our business is going to be. Like, our stuff, you know, we're going to get cool stuff like the Phil Juano directed Punisher fan film that he made. They just made it because they just wanted to. You know, he played the Punisher years ago, maybe around 2004. And then, you know, it was kind of like, oh, maybe I want to put a button on this or present the Punisher in a way that it's just never really quite was presented. And so I think he is an excellent example and an interesting guy. And if you are a creator of any type, he's a good guy that you should listen to because he'll just fucking make stuff. And that's exactly what you should do. So it was a blast hanging out with him. Thomas Jane on this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, a number 241. He also brought a kitty with him. He came in with a little kitten on his shoulder. And then the cat fell asleep on the soundboard, which I was convinced it was going to hit the button and then the studio was going to just melt down. But that never happened. The cat just curled up and just basked in the warmth of the electric glow of the soundboard.
That's adorable.
It was fucking adorable, Katie. That cat was fucking adorable. You can't, can't see it, but it is
referred to. You posted a picture on Instagram. I saw it.
Oh, I did post a cat picture on the Instagram. Yes, I did. So it is on my Instagram, which is Nerdist. I'm just Nerdist on Instagram, just like most stuff. Episode number 241.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I just have to put them on to make sure that everything sounds okay.
Yeah, somebody should be wearing it.
Someone should do something semi-professional, technical.
Not going to be me. Semi or actually professional.
You guys do this thing together?
Yeah, there's usually another guy, Jonah, who's not here right now because he had his wisdom teeth pulled out and stitch popped and now he's bleeding everywhere and there's a cat walking towards me.
Yes, Thomas Jane, we've already started recording.
Oh, cool.
Thomas Jane, you've brought the most adorable, it looks like a tiny leopard kitten.
Yeah, she's packs a punch, too. She's really vicious.
How old is it?
She's about 2.5 months old.
Oh, wow.
And she's a Savannah, so she's bred with an African serval.
Oh, jeez.
She's much more sort of predatory than a normal cat. She's also a lot smarter. And I've been carrying her around with me since she was a baby, so she loves riding in the car, and she loves hanging out in new places, as you can tell. She's looking for something.
She's enjoying herself.
Now, I feel like the podcast is forever ruined because no one else is going to bring a kitten, and that's just going to make me upset.
Right.
Every time someone comes in, I'm like, where's...
It's only going downhill from here, Chris.
Where is your cat?
You could keep your own cat, I guess.
Yeah, but
say kitten required.
No.
Kitten required, please.
No.
If that's going
like,
to come.
That's like having a pool table in your house. Then it takes all the fun out of going to play pool. Then there's a kitten that just appears, and then it just makes everything
a
million times
better. Yeah, we got a
pool table,
and it was fun for about a month and a half.
And then
it became a large table to put stuff on.
Yep. Yeah,
put rings. So starts getting the rings. Felt.
It's great to have you on. I mean, I've been a big fan of yours for a long time. Deep Blue Sea, amazing.
God, so good.
Still, when it comes on, I watch the shit out of it.
It was great. And when we premiered it in New York, I don't think Warner Brothers really understood that they had a good movie on their hands because they'd only allotted a certain amount, not very much for advertising. But then we premiered it in New York, and the part when Sam Jackson gets eaten, you could not hear the screen for at least 4 minutes.
Wow.
You couldn't hear what was going on because everybody was freaking the hell out. They were screaming and clapping and laughing and talking. They couldn't get over the fact that Samuel Jackson
it's
got eaten
be
halfway
the
through the film.
Best movie death.
Warner Brothers rushed to try to get more advertising, you know, but it was too late. And the movie opened up against Blair Witch.
Oh,
yeah.
Which was filmed in my backyard. Literally.
Really?
Literally. In the backwoods of Maryland, where I used to go play as a kid.
Wow.
That's where the movie was. So it really, it was a stab to the heart.
We
opened number two.
But people talk about Deep Blue Sea.
I tell you, they play at Deep Blue Sea a hell of a lot more than they do the Blair Witch.
That's true.
Well, because Blair Witch is one of those, like, once you see Blair Witch once, you're like, yeah, okay, I get it. And now since everyone has ripped off the found footage format... It's sort of tired.
Never good to begin with.
I saw it the way that you were supposed to see the movie, which is it was way before the movie came out, and someone just handed me an unmarked VHS tape, and they just said, "Watch this."
Right.
And
cool.
It was fun that way because I'd never seen anything like that before.
Right.
But then actually, once all the hype came along, they were like, "Okay, I get it."
I went and saw it in the theater, a man stood up. Turned out to be a film director, but he stood up in the third row of the theater and turned around halfway through the film and said, "This is shit." And he had an English accent. "This is shit. Complete shit."
That was Peter Jackson.
Yeah.
That is fantastic.
Made it memorable for me. I don't remember the movie.
My favorite part about the Blair Witch Project was when the Englishman stood up and told everyone the movie was a piece of shit. You want to come here? Here you go. Lap? No? No? All right. You have an open invitation to jump on my lap. Congratulations on Dirty Laundry.
Chris. Oh, wait, that's for the cat?
For you, too. You know what? Let's be fair. Let's be equitable. Congratulations on Dirty Laundry. It was.
Let's see if I got any dollar bills.
Did you? No, it's not a lap dance. It's just, I just cuddle him like a giant toddler, and I just stroke his hair.
Until I come.
Okay. All right.
That's what lap dances are for.
You guys hear about this girl that opened a cuddling business?
What?
I did hear about that, actually. Yeah, I think we covered it on Attack of the Show.
Cuddler. She's the only one.
That's a genius idea.
Yeah, $60 an hour, I think.
I saw an interview. She's like, this is not about sex. Okay, honey, that's cool.
But
it's just about cuddling.
Do you know what the I think the problem she's going to face is dudes are going to get super emotionally attached.
Well, I was like, every time I cuddle, I always get a hard on.
Yeah.
Right?
What do we got to do with that? Yeah, seriously.
You know, she'd have to bring like a pad or a pillow. She's like, this is my cuddling pillow. I place it on my ass so you can't.
There's a barrier.
So, yeah.
She should make a deal with the Fleshlight Corporation.
Who doesn't? Who? Everyone should make a deal with the Fleshlight Corporation.
Or partner up with a prostitute and say, I will prep them and then you finish the job. Then you kind of wrap it up. You sort of be the dismount.
That'd be cool.
So to speak.
Like, or the mount.
When you get up, you go, okay, and then the door opens. Yeah. And then this Janine walks in.
Garofalo.
Hey. You're like, I'm your ride.
Hey, fuck me. Dirty Laundry, which premiered at Comic-Con recently, which was the Punisher fan film that you made. It's fucking awesome.
Thanks.
Awesome. Phil Juano, who directed...
State of Grace.
Not only State of Grace, but Final one of the most analysis. Influential 80s movies, 3 o'clock High. Fucking phenomenal movie.
Great movie.
Which we've talked about on this podcast before. I think film nerds know about it.
Yeah.
But when people talk about 80s comedies, I think some people... But that movie... Completely redefined how that style of film.
We do our job. We mention it like every fourth podcast. We say 3 o'clock.
It's a fucking great movie. When I first saw it, I didn't realize that Phil had directed it. I was like, wow, that looked fucking amazing. And then I saw his name. Like, of course, Phil Juano. How did you guys get hooked up for then?
I had the idea to do this thing about a year ago or. Actually, a little bit more than that, but I decided to make it a reality about a year ago. And the beauty of, you know, dreaming about shit is you can sort of come up with any scenario you want. Mm-hmm. And I had the time and I said, well, you know, if I was going to do this, who would be great to direct the kind of movie that I want to see, the kind of... Well, the way that I'd like to see Frank Castle portrayed on film and the movie that I always kind of wanted to make and wanted to see. Phil Juano's name was at the top of my list because of State of Grace. State of Grace is a hard-hitting, urban, gritty action drama. And those movies... have fallen by the wayside, man. And
why do you think that is?
Well, the short answer is money. Studios decided that these movies that they made for $20 million or $30 million had a profit margin. They were profitable, but they weren't as profitable as the $100 million big budget action film. So when the studios have all been bought up by these major corporations, it was a very simple executive decision. Hey, if we take, you know, these like five or six, $30 million movies, cut them all out, take that money and just make one big Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Then our profit margin, the money that we get back for that $200 million,
yeah,
would have made six or seven other movies, the profit margin that we get back is phenomenally more based on the merchandising, the DVD, the pay-per-view,
sure,
and all that crap. So it's a business decision, and we find that this happens more and more in Hollywood. So the guys who, man, I feel sorry for kids today, you know, I really do, because their attention span is waning, so... believe it or not, it's hard for them to sit through movies like The Godfather.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
So, and, you know, and then even movies like Taxi Driver, mm-hmm. you know, or Rolling Thunder.
Right.
Well, these movies just don't move fast enough. And the problem is that so that all that great drama, like how to really build a fantastic action drama story, you know, like you got even with the with First Blood, Rambo.
Right, yeah. Right.
Has kind of fallen by the wayside. And the modern film techniques that people use and are used to today are all employed in the big $200 million movies. So a modern movie that tells a story like Death Wish or any Sidney Lumet film has, we just don't have it.
Sure. Do you think some of that
doesn't really exist? And then, you know, and the problem is that it does, it takes a few of those to come out with a gem, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not, you know, you look back at the 70s and you see those handful of movies and you go, oh, the 70s were awesome. But the fact is that for every, you know, great film, for every Rolling Thunder, there's 20 or 30 really crappy ones that nobody remembers. Right?
20 or 30 death races.
That's the industry, you know? That's making movies, right?
But I wonder if some of that is part of. I wonder if some of the responsibility falls onto the shoulders of the consumers who, if they see a movie like that and they see a trailer for it, they go, eh, "I don't need to see that in the theater. I'll just wait till I can get it on Netflix or you know if I can."
It's a little bit of a thing. The consumers basically, you know, they pick whatever their choice. You know, they pick from the choices that they have, right? So every now and then a movie comes out, you know, but that's just not enough. It's not enough for you know, and then there's the diehard guys that they're going to China and Korea. And I mean, they're watching all the movies that come out and there's some great, fantastic films. And they every now and then one gets picked up and remade by Hollywood, you know, like Old Boy.
Yeah.
But for these kind of movies, the industry is just gone. And you're right. It is a consumer. Hollywood will make anything.
Sure.
You know, we can't really blame Hollywood. If they, you know, if we watched cat shit dry, you know, that was thrown against the glass wall and everybody went to see it, then there would be six or seven cat shit drying on a glass wall.
Really great, really big fast. Budget. Like
yeah, huge.
Guillermo,
I like Catch It too, actually, more than the first one.
The sequel, I really feel like they lost it in the trilogy. They tried to get too many different pieces of shit in at once.
Well,
and it
Catch
was just
It
like,
Two, parentheses diarrhea, was great.
Right,
that's when they really hit their stride.
But in the third one, they brought in a love interest, and it was just like
urine was involved.
Yeah,
I was not having
keep it simple. But I always wonder if people talk about, like, it's always interesting how the third movie in a lot of trilogies, it's just like, oh, they've been with these films for like 10 or 11 years. And how do you manage to the whole, like, we have to make 1, 2, 3 of a movie.
Right.
It's like, how do you keep upping the stakes?
It's not profitable unless it's franchisable. And that's another reason why these movies, you know, aren't getting made is because if you don't have a franchisable character, then how are we going to make any money off this? And that kind of thinking, I think, is ripe to be destroyed. And what I think is that a lot like the 70s, when you had Easy Rider come out and blow everybody away by being a smash hit, the reason why that happened is because the studios had lost the touch with the pulse of what kids wanted to see. They were putting out musicals.
Sure.
If you look at the box office at the time, they were putting out all these weird ass.
Well, at the end of the 70s, yeah, because you had Grease, which was so huge, and then so everyone started making all these crazy.
Right.
And then then in the 80s.
But then what happened was an explosion of kind of this renegade and independent auteur filmmaker was born. And you had lower budgets and independent movies, independent producers. But what I think is happening now is that the internet is becoming that new Wild West.
Mm-hmm.
That people with passion and a story to tell, which is what these guys were, you know, are going to find a way, any way, shape, or form, to get that out there. And that's kind of what the idea was with Dirty Laundry, you know. It's like, well, this is what I want to see, and I'm not seeing it. So why don't we just do it?
Yeah.
You know? And thank God, you know, I mean, Phil was kind of the perfect storm, because not only was he the perfect director to do it, and such a tremendously passionate guy, he does a lot of commercials, and he's a top-notch commercial director, and he's got this crew that he works with over and over again. And he said, look, guys, we're shooting this thing on the weekend. We don't have any money. We have enough money to rent the location and to feed people. Whoever shows up, we'll buy him Philippe's French dip. So,
oh, good move.
So come on down if you can. If you can't, no big deal. And we expected like 10 or 15 people to show up. 75 people showed up.
Whoa.
The whole crew.
Oh, that's a lot more sandwiches than you thought you were going to
have. I was like, I don't know, guys. Maybe the Philippe's.
Could you guys split the. You have a half.
Split a sandwich?
Who likes open face?
No lamb, right? Just don't order lamb.
God. I'm just thinking about Philippe.
So, you know, and that's because of Phil, because he's got so much passion, and the crew just loves this guy so much. And we had Andy Chang show up, who works with. Crazy.
Okay, I'm listening.
Which one? Crazy? Michael Bay?
No.
Sybil.
No, the action dude. The John Karate Woo? Chop guy.
Oh, Jackie Chan.
Jackie Chan.
Of course, Jackie Chan. Karate Chop guy.
Terrible way to describe Jackie Chan.
No, it was perfect because I got it immediately.
You did get it.
Andy Chang works with a Karate Chop guy and
Jackie Chan.
Karate Cop tries a great film, by the way. I think we should make that a movie, Karate Chop Guy.
Pat Romano, who's a top-notch stunt dude, he showed up, and all these guys showed up. And you know, Phil, it was all about passion. The reason it turned out so good is because everybody loved what they were doing, you know? Phil coordinated the whole fight scene in his bedroom the night before.
Oh, my God.
And his wife's like, what the hell are you doing? He's like, I'm beating 8 guys up with a bottle of Jack.
Well, that's the whole, I think that is the lifeblood of what contemporary digital culture is all about. It's exactly what you said. People is just going, oh, you know, actually we do have the technology to just go make the stuff we want to see. So why are we not doing it? And I think it's important for people like you who are established in the business to let people know, like, this is an okay thing to do.
Damn fucking straight. Damn straight, man. Because, you know, what it comes down to is again, we're inundated with this consumerism in our culture. And what we fucking forget is that this shit is fun.
Yeah.
You know, and we're
supposed to be.
There's passion behind it. You know, it's somehow it's like, even though we know it's not true, if we're told over and over again that the point of existence is to consume shit and to make money and to consume more shit, then sooner or later, you're just going to start believing it, you know? And the fact is that that's not the fucking point.
Right.
At all.
Wait a second. What is the point?
No, we'll get to that in a minute.
The point is to, you know, the point is to pick things that are fun and work with people that you like and just make fun stuff. And that's where the best stuff comes from. Because there's no, like, you're not looking at marketing charts. You're not like, well, how do we hit this? You know, you're not, everything doesn't get kind of mushed into this bland vanilla pulp.
Hit this demographic.
It's just like, you wanted to make a Punisher fan film because you're a huge Frank Castle fan. You played the Punisher.
I just felt like I had an itch that I hadn't scratched, you know. I just, everything that I'd learned about the character, and everything that turned me on about the world of Frank Castle was just never been put on film, you know, and it really bummed me out. So I really just felt like, obviously they've destroyed the franchises. This will never be a film. So, but I just wanted to give people something to point to. When I talked about Frank Castle on film.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's why we did it, you know. And at the same time, I was reading scripts, and one of the best scripts that I really have ever read is written by this guy named Chad St. John. He wrote this script called Motor City that the Hughes brothers are doing, and I called him up, and we sat down, and we had a 4-hour lunch at some place on La Brea, and he was, you know, he was just like, these guys just kind of appeared in my life, and I got them all together.
Yeah.
I was also had a meeting with this guy, Adi Shankar, over at 1984, and he seemed like a man of the cloth, so I put them all together, and before you know it, everybody said yes, and then, but it was really Chad. I mean, if he hadn't, you know, people say shit, and they're like, wouldn't it be cool?
Yeah.
We just fucking on a weekend, I'll get my crew,
yeah,
we'll fucking shoot it. What the fuck?
Right.
We put it on YouTube? Yeah. And, you know, and then you go about your day, and then, you know, you call your agent, and you're like, dude, where, am I doing this job or not? I mean, come on, man. If they're not going to pay me, I'm not going to show up. And then nothing happens. It's, you know, months go by, and you forget about it. And you're like, what was that thing when you're drunk at a party? I almost did that.
Well, that's why.
I was going to do that, man. I was going to.
That's why the technology is so important, because you don't, it's not like, well, we have to go rent a 35 millimeter camera and then we have to, you know, like, you can just go, fuck, grab the camera. Let's just run out back. Let's just fucking shoot this right now.
In a way, I mean, in a way, pal.
I think the big thing is.
On the other hand, there's a lot of shit like that on YouTube, and, you know, you can tell.
So what's going to happen now? Was this just sort of a one-time thing that's just like, we're done with it? Or were you hoping that this would spawn a rebooted Punisher film?
I hear those Marvel folks are making a lot of movies lately.
They're doing all right.
They're doing all right with their A characters, but the Marvel Max stuff has always let them down. You know, mm-hmm. Marvel is the Marvel universe,
sure.
And then there's the Marvel Dark Horse Marvel Max universe, mm-hmm. right? And that's where you have your Ghost Rider, your Punisher, your Deadpool, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where he fits in. But and that stuff has always been a letdown for Marvel. So I don't see them. You know, they everything comes around, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, I don't. I never saw them in a world where all this kind of stuff made sense. Then yeah, you could probably get a reboot going. I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I just made this for the fans. I, without any expectation of this ever being a film, you know, and that's why I did it.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to make sure that we had a little piece of, you know, an authentic Frank Castle on screen before the world ends in December, of this
2012,
year, right?
So, December 21st.
There's not a lot of time left.
You got in just under the wire.
Just under the wire, man. You know, not that anybody's going to care because nobody's going to be alive to say, remember when they did that?
Yeah, I haven't even bothered putting anything on my iCal past then. Right. It's just all empty.
So, but, you know, but I do think that what's fun is that we get to open up the possibilities. And we're seeing an audience, you know, if anything, the short reaffirms that there is an audience for hard R material that's treated seriously. I think there's a huge audience for that. I think that, you know, any time when people feel disenfranchised, when the man is coming down on them and nobody's got any money and they feel powerless, that these kind of characters resonate, you know? Somebody who says, fuck you. And that really resonates. So, you know, if anything, we've proven that. I'd love to see, I'd love somebody to dust off some old Walter Hill script and say,
oh yeah,
you guys should do this, you know? They
might as well remake Falling Down.
Perfect world, that could happen.
You might be the guy to do that. It's possible. I mean, you have a comic imprint.
That's the other thing is, you know, that I've, again, you know, I just didn't see any of the comics that I like to read on the shelves. It was all just garbage. Not all of it. There's in the underground stuff is amazing, and then the independent stuff is great. And I'll always be a fan of Charles Burns and Robert Crumb and all these, all the great Daniel Clowes and all the great guys that I love, you know, corn-fed comics. But I wasn't seeing the science fiction stuff that inspired me as a kid. So I started Raw Studios, and we created Bad Planet, which is this epic sci-fi huge story, which I'm very proud of. We're halfway through it. And then we're working on the second half now. I got Bruce Jones, who actually was my inspiration for Bad Planet, who created comics like Alien Worlds and Twisted Tales and, He did a little run on the Hulk. It's, you know, he's got a great career. But my favorite stuff of his has always been his short stories that were, of course, inspired by the old EC comics by Al Feldstein and Bill Gaines. So I created my dream science fiction comics, and I'm very, very proud of Bad Planet. And we're working on part two right now. Part one is issues 1 through 6 are collected and for sale on my website at rawstudios.com. And we also resolicited it, so you should see it in comic book shops this fall, too.
Nice.
I'm slowly plotting away at getting part two going. You know, but again, I don't have a production schedule, so I can take as much time as I want. I can hire artists that normally wouldn't do comics,
right?
Because they make their living in advertising or other places, and I can give them, you know, a year to work on a story, and put it out when it's great. Because once it's out, nobody remembers. You know that thing.
How long it took?
Too long to make. Once it's out, it's out.
And this collected volume took too long to assemble.
Well, our little comedy theater is in the back of Meltdown Comics. So if you ever want to do like. When stuff comes out, if you want to do launch parties or whatever, we'll totally set that shit up for you.
Yeah,
like,
that'd be badass.
That'd be really fun.
I have a launch party for Dark Country, my graphic novel.
Yeah.
That's out. It's out in Diamond now, and so it should be hitting stores in the fall. Let's do a launch party.
That'd be awesome. We can totally do that.
In stores in September, so yeah, consider it done.
We can absolutely do that.
Meltdown.
Meltdown, yeah. Meltdown's fun. Gaston's been amazing.
Great stuff there.
Yeah, they do.
Meltdown. I love Golden Apple, but I really love that Meltdown. They've got my kind of stuff in there.
Yeah, you know? Gaston cultivates quite a collection of good
the fucking
good
guys
stuff.
On it.
Kevin Eastman's little
Kevin Eastman's little
beautiful.
Little
is that still up?
No. Yeah, he moved it to the because that Gaston took over that side space to be sort of like a pop up shop,
right.
And so Kevin had it for a while with all his turtle stuff. And which was
all the heavy metal stuff.
And all the heavy metal stuff, too.
It's going to be Dave Clock's print shop.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Cool.
So it's going to be screens to look
like. We have the same case, but yours is white.
Yeah, I feel like mine's good and yours is evil.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Is that how you see things?
You're an Imperial Guard and I'm a Stormtrooper.
That's what it is. I like to see it that way.
My iPhone wants to fuck your iPhone.
Let's do it.
Oh, mine's the cuddler. Here, let me prep your phone. Let me get you a phone boner. And then your phone can take care of it. I just want to cuddle.
Actually, you know
what? That's kind of how it works. I'm the cuddler and then Matt just fucks people. Matt just comes in and fucking finishes them off. I just kind of stroke them. I tell them it's going to be okay, and they get this weird emotional boner, and then Matt's like, let's get this going.
Then they deal with my weird emotional boner.
But then who do you go to for fuck cuddles?
Yeah, Gordon Ramsay.
I'll make a good serial killer, the cuddler.
The cuddler.
Right?
Oh, my spine. No, pull in close. I love it. I mean, you know, what is interesting to me about you is that, you know, so many people know you, like, you know, like, oh, you do comedy and you like Hung was great and you're the super attractive, like handsome leading man type. But in you,
not in here.
And you played yourself in Arrested Development.
In you beats the heart of a nerd.
Totally. Yeah. No, I mean, I grew up in Maryland in the. Thing that really changed my life was, you know, I grew up in kind of the suburbs and it was incredibly boring with nothing to do and it was horrible. But the thing that changed my life was Barbarian Books in Bethesda, Maryland, which, by the way, I think is still there. I was talking to somebody doing an interview from a guy in Maryland, and he said he was just in there like 4 months ago. So
oh, wow.
I believe Barbarian Books is still there in Maryland. It's, you know, it's one of those classic musty bookstores that has, it's so crammed with stuff, you have to turn sideways to get down the aisle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, boxes, and just, he doesn't even know what he's got in there. And, of course, I used to find, you know, comic books in there that were like, really old and probably worth, like, $10, but I'd pay like a buck.
Yeah.
Be like, I just got this comic book. You know, who knows what this is worth? It was stuff like you could find really neat stuff. All the pulp novels, you know, all the old Frazetta novels were all in there, and all the creepies and eeries and all the EC reprints. And And then he also had original comics up in the front, too, at the time. I don't know what he's got in there now, but that's where I bought my first original EC comic books, which I can still remember the smell of those books and the way they felt and just the feeling that they used to give me, which was this incredible nostalgic thing. I wasn't even born yet, so I don't know what I'm nostalgic about, but there it is. And it's like the art and it was like magic. They were fucking magical.
I like that if that store is still there, it's probably even harder to move through right now.
Oh yeah.
But there's a handful of those places.
Oh, and by the way, like the store, the guy who worked in the store was a hunchback.
Uh-huh.
So oh, wow. I just find that to be just fantastic.
That he's they'd run in the bookstore.
Very appropriate. Yeah, it's very appropriate.
It was wonderful. You know? And it was like that was it. There's no other place in the world that can beat Barbarian Books for there's just that real old fashioned nostalgic pulpy novels. You know, Robert E. Howard.
Yeah.
You know all that wonderful stuff, and you know the old Shadow Pulps and. I don't know. All that stuff's fantastic, and I wish that there was a color. What's the word? I wish there was something like it, similar. You know, today I wish there was like more of that stuff interpreted in today's world. We've lost the kind of hard boiled
corollary.
Thank you.
Right, that's the word we were looking for.
No
sure,
corollary. Films, you know, there's books. There's like Max Allen Collins who writes.
Well, maybe it's time. Maybe you know. I think if you're noticing that there's this hole in the industry, which for whatever reason, through you know, like too much market research or whatever, and they're going in the wrong direction. Maybe it's time for that shit to come back around.
Hell to the yeah. You know,
interesting.
It's you know, and I was. Curious, you know, as far as what Dirty Laundry would do, and it seems to me that there are like-minded people out there.
I think it's a very simple formula, which is if you make a cool thing that comes from a real place, people will dig it.
Yeah, but I'm talking about like, you know, yes, cool, but what's that? That's like Ghostbusters was cool.
Yes, it was.
I mean, cool in the sense that
there's like a hard-boiled kind of pulpy feeling that I get when I read, you know, books like The Executioner, which The Punisher was based on or stolen from.
Borrowed. Yeah. Could be returned later.
So that turns me on. And I also think that I'm pretty good at playing those kind of characters. But, you know, I'll be damned if I could find any play. I mean, I love this movie I did called Stander. It was right up my alley, but find another one, you know? Yeah. I haven't read another script like that since I did it.
Maybe this means you're going to have to start making these films yourself. You might have to shoulder the responsibility.
If nobody else does, it's going to be me, and it probably will be me. But that's what I'm going to do, you know? I'm going to direct a Western going to do it in the fall. We might push it to the spring. So we really
this is definitely happening.
It's definitely, yeah. Our money is cool. Our ship has come in on this Western. It's called A Magnificent Death from a Shattered Hand.
Oh, wow.
Good
title.
And it's a fantastic script. I got Nick Nolte to star in it.
The cat's got one of the buttons off the board. I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I just want to make sure.
That's a bottle cap.
No, it's in her mouth.
Oh.
Just make sure she doesn't choke.
She
pulled one of the knobs off the board.
And she got a knob in her mouth.
Whoa. Hey, come on. Well, hey, it's a family show.
It's not in her mouth. Oh, now it's in her mouth.
She's a teenager. She can have a knob in her mouth.
She lost it. She lost it.
Oh, good.
She's warming up. Now she's going to tear the place apart.
Listen, if the place could have an adorable destruction at the hands of that cat, I am all for it. I don't own this studio. I don't care. Your Western, you got Nick Nolte in the Western?
Yeah, he's starring in it, and we're casting the rest of it now. Jeremy Irons is going to try to come in.
Oh, my God.
And for a couple of days, and we're going to get a great, great cast together because it's one of those scripts that just kind of wrote itself.
I don't want to impose, but can I just be, no. I just want to, here's what I want. No. I've always wanted to be a guy in the Western that when someone comes in, he's one of the guys that clears out of the bar.
Right. We don't have a bar.
God damn it.
In the script.
How about a bar? A bar with a peony.
Nope. No bar.
All right. All right.
Can well, you I can be think a about tree? It.
I'll get back to you. So after I do that, and we make a great film out of that, and we will, then I'm going to do something urban, you know. I don't know, what's the word for this kind of stuff? I call it like hard-boiled pulp. But,
yeah.
But there's, I think there's a better way to describe it. You know, but it's all those great crime novels.
Right.
That true, were written like, by Harry Whittington and Donald Westlake.
Like the true crime, you know, true
crime stuff.
Grit.
Was, James Ellroy.
It's just that wonderful. It's those movies by Francisco De Leo.
Yeah.
Like Caliber 9 and The Italian Connection.
Right.
French Connection. Italian Job.
Connection.
Is there Italian? There's an Italian Connection. I don't even know about this.
It's a great movie. It's great.
Is it?
And they were inspired by Chandler and mm-hmm. all those great old pulpy guys. The Italians were when they made that stuff. So that's kind of the genesis, I guess. Is yeah, it's it all kind of comes back to Mickey Spillane and
yeah.
Raymond Chandler and all that. And then it kind of the way it evolved in the '60s, though, you know, and it got really lean and pulpy and urban and just oh it was just beautiful, you know, and they weren't afraid to like beat the crap out of a girl, you know, just slap her around. There's a scene in the Italian Connection, they slap this girl around for like 4 minutes. I mean, you're just like, wow, they knock her and all over the apartment, all four walls, on the bed, on the floor, they're just knocking.
I improvised that in the film. Oh well, there was not in the script.
Anyway, not that I'm promoting knocking the crap out of women, I just mean that, you know, they didn't have to be politically correct or appeal to us to try to every goddamn demographic on the planet. It's disenfranchising, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's disenfranchising as a man. I can't even fucking walk down the street with a cigarette in my mouth. Not that I smoke cigarettes.
I do.
But, Matt smokes clothes.
I can't have a cigar. If I have a cigar over on Wilshire, I'll have everybody coming over to me telling me I got, well, can't you put that out?
Right.
And it's depressing.
Well, I'm excited that you are kind of taking this on, that you're going to take this on and kind of make the films that you want to see. It's very digital culture-y to, I think, taking that mindset into traditional media is very important right now. Yeah. Because there's this whole layer of films, like you said, because they're focusing on the blockbusters, it's all like top down, it's all top down shit. Well, so there's this whole other area that's not being serviced.
Dream. I'll lay this out for you real quick. There's a website online where it's, I forget what it's called, but if you want to see a band, you log on to this website and you say, I live in Spokane, Washington.
Oh, it's demanded or something like that. Yeah.
It's one of those. There's probably more than one, but if you get enough hits for a particular band in a city, then that band will go and play in your
sure.
city. And it's a brilliant way of designing a tour schedule. You know, they go where their fans are.
Yeah.
And imagine if you did that with a movie. You know, if we said, all right, we've got this type of movie starring these guys, and if you want to see it, if you're there, you know, hit the button. Okay, so then, you know, we've got, like, there's a midnight show on Saturday night.
Yeah.
So you fill up the theater, you beam you don't run a print over there, you beam it in from satellite, which a lot of theaters have that now.
Yeah.
They can beam the movie right into right where and when you want it, wherever you want it. And you could travel around like that. You know, I could get an old silver, you know, what are those called? Those big old trailers that are still
Airstreams.
Yeah, I could get a big old Airstream and just make a national tour driving around, and we could play it in, you know, drive-ins or, you know, downtown against the side of a wall.
Now, that would be amazing. That would be fucking amazing. If it wasn't even like a movie theater thing, if just one summer you took a movie you made and put it in an Airstream, drove it around and just projected it a bunch up against shit and then just invited people to come out and bring their own food. What a fun experience that would be.
That's exactly what I want to do. And you're right. Like, you know, in some towns, you'd have to do it in, like, the local theater. But in other towns, you could do it up against the side of a building, you know. Or you could, you could put up your own, you know, an old drive-in somewhere. You could really improvise in a parking lot. You could hang a giant, you know, or maybe like an old billboard that's not being used, you know. Project a movie on there.
That would be fun.
But everybody would know it was coming from the... From the Twitter and the websites and all that crap now.
Yeah, I just drove across country, and there are a lot of, in most towns that you hit along the way, half of the towns are just shut down, like abandoned businesses and empty buildings. And, you know, I think it'd be a fun use of that.
Jesus.
It's pretty crazy. Drove from L.A. to Memphis on the sort of northerly route, which I think was the I-70, and then the southern route back, the I-40, all the way across. So, you know, as it hit, like... Arkansas and Amarillo, Texas, and back through.
I've done it a few times. It's always enlightening.
But it's so fun.
Everything was kind of
most small towns towns. There's this sort of there's a sort of like standard kind of cookie cutter town that, you know, obviously around the Industrial Revolution sprung up, where you have most of the towns have a main street, which is just a main drag of two story buildings that seem like early 1900s, and then a little bit of residential stuff kind of around those streets. Wow. And in most of those towns, like, half the buildings are just empty.
Wow. What's this cough button?
There you go.
Just shut you off for a sec so you can cough.
I didn't cough.
No, but then, see.
But if you do, no one will hear you.
That's right.
Except it protects for the bleed through on my mic.
So Raw Studios is you and it's Tim Bradstreet, right?
Yeah.
Is Steve Niles involved at all?
Yeah, Steve was with us in the very beginning, and he kind of taught me how to write comic books, and he helped me plot out Bad Planet. He was incredibly helpful. He's a terrific guy, but he's also a very busy guy. So Steve is off running his own show, and he does very well at it. And Raw Studios, we bring on, you know, we're working with a guy named Mike Carey right now on a script called The Lichen, which is kind of like the movie Alien, but it's set in a 17th century castle.
I mean,
instead of aliens, it's a werewolf.
Oh, yeah.
And then Mike's doing a great job with an artist named Sean O'Connor. And then we're working on a reboot of Alien Worlds, too, with Bruce Jones.
Oh, that's great.
Cool. Yeah, we got Corbin. We got Bill Stout. I'm trying to get Mark Schultz, but he's like, I just can't do it. He's like, more than one page. It's not a cover.
Well, is it hard for you to go? I mean, maybe you choose not to anymore, but is it hard for you to go work on stuff that you're not directly involved in that way? Like, can you still just go be an actor on stuff and be okay with that?
No, it's getting a lot harder to do that. I just did a movie earlier in the year. Robert Duvall said, you know, one for the art and one for the condo.
Right.
But I just did one for the condo earlier in the year. And it's depressing. It's really bad, you know. It's just, I don't know. I've gotten to a certain point where I've directed a movie, and that was my film school. Dark Country.
Dark Country, yeah.
It was one of the very first 3D films in Hollywood, the digital 3D movies. But that was my film school, and it was all taught me. It was so enlightening. It was so fantastic, and it was so liberating when to get through that and go, I can do this all by myself, you know. I mean, with my crew. Yeah.
There's no better way to learn.
And my guys, and, you know, but we can do this. We can run the show. And that, I had a terrific writer named Tab Murphy, who also wrote the short story for Dark Country, which Thomas Ott, mm-hmm. a fantastic artist out of, I think he's in Switzerland, adapted for us. So Thomas did he adapted the short story of Dark Country into the graphic novel. So it's not the movie, it's the short story. So it's different than the film in a lot of ways, but so it's his own interpretation of this story. And Thomas Ott tells his graphic storytelling with no words.
Mm-hmm.
He uses a scratchboard technique. So he actually starts, instead of a white piece of paper, he starts with a black sheet that he buys special, and you can scratch away the black and revealing white underneath. And that's how he does all of his art, and it's beautiful. If you guys have a website, we can throw up some examples.
Sure, yeah.
But it's Yeah, he inspired me. He inspired the look of the film. So I called him up and after I'd done the film and I said, you know, you inspired this movie. And I was thinking it might be really cool if you interpreted the same short story that I interpreted. It would be like two different artists looking at the same, you know, piece of work and drawing from there and doing their own thing with it. So we've just finished that, and you know it comes out in shops in September.
Did he see your film before?
He didn't. He never saw it.
That's perfect.
He actually
That's
had
fantastic.
Friends watch it for him.
Yeah.
He said, "I don't want to look at it because I don't want it to like muddy the
taint
water."
Taint his right. Yeah.
But,
exactly.
You know, is this thing any good? I mean, am I gonna? So he had friends watch it for him, and the report back was, "Oh yeah, this is right up your alley. Yeah, definitely." Go for it.
What did you learn? What was the biggest thing that you learned going into this experience as a director and coming out on the other side?
You know, it's about the people that you surround yourself with.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest lesson that I learned. That the execution of an idea depends on a lot of other people understanding exactly what that idea is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest lesson that I learned, you know? I storyboarded the whole film. I had all these great shots, and a lot of them are in the movie, but I had all these fantastic things in mind and a visual of what I wanted this thing to be. But if the DP that I hired doesn't quite grasp, you know, what I'm talking about, then he's going to sort of bring his own thing. And sometimes that can be brilliant. But I had a wonderful DP, but the biggest thing for me was in the post-production when I'm dealing with people who are executing the ideas, you know, in the editing room, in the special effects, and all these guys, they have to be all on the same page, and that's my job as a director. I have to get all these different people, ideas, artists, and personalities all kind of moving in the same direction and on the same boat.
Yeah.
And I think that your ability to do that determines how good of a director, how well your vision is going to be translated on screen. And you still have to have a good vision.
Well, I think most people don't see that part of it. They just go, oh, it's a director. He kind of figures out like how to tell the story visually. But all the behind the scenes stuff, to me, it sounds like an awful job because you are constantly... I feel like it's like putting four hamsters on a track and being like, no, come on. Okay, no, you got to keep going. Okay, come on. And then just the whole way you're trying to just keep them in line.
It's a lot like it, yeah. That's true. Only it's 60 hamsters.
and some of them have egos. And they're
Some of them think they're cats. You're not a cat.
Cats. You're a hamster.
We're all hamsters. We're all hamsters, bro.
We're all hamsters, bro, just running away on the wheel of entertainment every fucking day. How was your, I mean, you, as the Punisher, what was your experience like with that movie?
With the Dirty Laundry or just
no the original the Punisher that you did. By the way, if anyone wants to see something hilarious, you have to watch the trailer for the 1989 Dolph Lundgren The Punisher, which already feels like 50 years old, even though it's just from 89. It's like coming this summer.
See, that's kind of what I'm talking about. Like kids today, they watch a movie from the 70s or the 80s. And they're like, what the fuck is that? You know, even the good ones.
Yeah.
Not all kids. I mean, there's a lot of guys out there, there always will be, who can appreciate this stuff. But, you know, when you get out into the broad scheme of things, it's you know. And that's why remaking stuff is viable.
Sure. Touch Jaws.
Right. Just don't touch Jaws. No, absolutely.
If you're going to do a shark movie... Have it eat Samuel L. Jackson after That's an inspirational
all.
Speech.
It works out for all of us.
I was a huge fan of Hung, too, by the way. I genuinely enjoyed the shit out of that. And the guy
who had great writing.
The guy who played your ex-wife's husband was also in The Punisher.
Yeah.
Right? What's it? Eddie, what is his name?
Who are we talking about?
From Hung.
Oh, yeah. That's right. The guy I tortured.
Yes, the guy you tortured with a popsicle.
Yeah, he's there. He is back for more. Back for more on TV. He's a great guy. Terrific guy.
Do you like comedy, or do you just prefer kind of?
I love it all. I mean, I love storytelling. I love, my favorite quote by an actor is Harrison Ford. He said, I really look at myself as an actor. I'm a storyteller, and that's that. I really took to heart when I heard that. I'm a storyteller.
Yeah.
I'm not really necessarily an actor or a director or a comic book writer or a producer. I'm a storyteller.
Was television?
I love stories. I love them all. I love comedies, and you know, I love musicals. I love horror movies. I love action. I love adventure. I love the weird French films, and I love in the realm of the senses, the sexy Japanese movies. Mm-hmm. I love it all, man.
Did you like working in television?
You know, we didn't. I don't know what.
Probably didn't feel like television.
It probably didn't feel like television because you're single camera.
We didn't. You know, we were, I think, the last show on HBO to shoot on film. So we were shooting on film. Most of the crew had all come from film. Our schedule was very, pretty relaxed as far as TV goes. I think we had 8 days to shoot 30 minutes.
Well, that's not bad.
TV is pretty good. And sometimes it was 9. No, I haven't. I don't know the experience of. I know my ex-wife shot television.
Yeah,
and that's 22 episodes. It's 9 or 10 months out of the year, and you're doing 44 minutes in. I think they give you 7 days to do, or maybe it's 7 or 8 days. You're doing 45, 48 minutes.
Yeah,
or whatever the hell a TV show is, and that's insane. You know, and everybody goes crazy, or they all lose their minds. And it's a very bonding experience, too. But, you know, she was in the hospital season 2 or 3, exhaustion, real
sure.
exhaustion.
Well,
exhaustion,
especially.
That's why Vincent D'Onofrio had to stop doing Criminal Intent for a whole season.
Well, it's.
Right.
Because especially on that schedule, they shoot like a film, but just year round. So you could work. You could work midnight right. to 8 in the morning, and then, you know, like a day and a half later, then it's like, oh, we need you at 6 a.m., and, you know.
Yeah.
But the whole experience just feels a little chokey. Feels a little chokey.
Chokey? That's what we're going with?
Chokey?
Yeah.
Okay.
Chokey? Yeah, chokey.
Chokey.
Grabs you by the throat. It's good to have a television job.
Sure. Yeah.
But at the same time.
Not that one.
Sitcoms are the best schedule-wise.
Yeah.
Just aren't a lot of sitcom jobs anymore because the sitcom medium is coming to a slow crawl.
Television's dying.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So, you know, you can see where everything's going. I'm surprised it's taking us so fucking long. But you can see where it's all going. The internet and the idea of stations, the idea of show times when something comes on at a certain time on a certain day, all that shit's going by the wayside, mm-hmm. you know? And the real release schedule is kind of what we did with Dark Country. I mean, Dirty Laundry. You put it up, you know, you tell some people, and then...
And that's out.
And then it's out.
Spread like a virus.
Of course, there'll always be all the advertising, all that bullshit.
Premiere dates don't really mean as much anymore.
They don't mean anything.
People just want to watch when they want to watch.
It's just a party.
Yeah.
I mean, there's excitement for things, and people can't wait for certain stuff to come out. But there'll always be that. There'll always be your core audience that needs to be there. And it's fun to wait in line for something. You know, I waited in line for Star Wars when I was a kid. Not the first one, the second one. And, you know, I stood in line for a couple hours, and it was awesome. It was so exciting.
Yeah.
And we need that. And we need a communal experience. So what I'm saying is that the internet and all that stuff is all going to be amalgamated into one sort of thing. But here's where things are going to get different. Right now, we're still trying to appeal to the widest audience, the lowest common denominator. But what can happen here is that we can, you know, if you like gothic steampunk movies.
I don't, but I'm listening.
There'll be a whole section of people that will make movies and material for that audience.
Sure.
And they'll have a budget based on, you know, what that audience can support. So we'll see a individuation. Everything will become tailored, kind of.
Sure.
So you'll find your own channel. You'll create. It's kind of like picking your favorite channels on cable.
Yeah.
You'll be able to create your own network of entertainment, and there'll be people that are passionate about what they're doing, and you'll be able to get it.
Yeah.
You know, you won't be able to say, well, they'll never make another Punisher film because they killed the franchise and nobody would go, and they're not going to. But no, they'll say, you know what? There's 4 million people. There's 5 million people here that'll pay for that. We know that.
Yeah.
So we're going to make the movie and we're going to base it on that. I always wanted to try an experiment where we pre-sell tickets.
Oh yeah, yeah. And then
I always wanted to try that. It's kind of like Kickstarter, but I would like to say, okay, here's the director, here's the actors, and here's sort of a nice synopsis of what you're going to see without giving away too many spoilers, and here's some art.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the way it's going to look and feel. You know, you could get as deep as you want. You could just look at the poster and say, yeah, I want to see that. Or you can go down and learn all about the composer
yeah.
and all the people involved and the costumes and all that. But really, you could just hit the button and go, I'll buy that movie.
You could absolutely do that. You could do that with your traveling Airstream film, and people who support the film get the first tickets.
Yeah.
You could do, I think you could do that like that.
Yeah, but where do I do it? I don't think...
Kickstarter.
You think?
Yeah, you do it on Kickstarter because you basically raise the money through Kickstarter or Indiegogo or whatever, but you probably Kickstarter since you're already working on stuff with them.
Yeah, by the way, Bad Planet Video Game Kickstarter, we are relaunching the Kickstarter site, our mm-hmm. page or whatever. So we've got more information about what the game is going to be, and we're also announcing that I'm going to do the voice, me and Ron Perlman. Ron Perlman's going to come in and play the convict, which is... I don't know if you've seen Bad Planet, the convict. There's nobody else in the world that can play the convict but Ron Perlman. So it's just, you know, I wish I could do it, but I just don't have the voice. But so Ron's agreed to come in and do that, and that's exciting.
So you're Kickstarter for Bad Planet, which people should go to and support.
Check out the Kickstarter Bad Planet video game, and we got a lot of cool, what do they call them, prizes?
Swag.
A lot of cool stuff.
I think you pick 20 cities or whatever kind of makes sense financially with how many tickets you could sell versus how much money you could raise. You do the Kickstarter campaign. The lowest level of donation gets a ticket to see the finished movie when it comes to through those towns. Oh, you could do that. You could do that in a heartbeat. I think it's a cool idea.
I think it's really cool. So Kickstarter is the only way to do that?
Probably not the only way, but I think it would be the...
You need a lot of eyeballs. You need a way
you need information
of
like how
information out there that you're doing this, right?
Well, because it...
Or does it just spread by itself?
It spreads.
Some of it does.
If people think it's a good idea, it spreads. It's like the company that made the... What was the watch?
The Nano watch.
Yeah, like that Bluetooth watch.
By the way, where the hell is my Dick Tracy FaceTime watch?
Seriously, it's fucking 2012.
Dude, I'm looking online. I'm like, okay, I see the wristwatch phones. There are a few out there. They look like shit. But where is the FaceTime on the watch? It's 2012.
We have the technology.
No kidding.
No one wants it. I don't know what it is. You know,
do you remember
in the mid '80s, like when
I've been
the
dying
when,
for this thing since I was six.
There were TV watches in the '80s that on the heels of the Walkman and the Watchman, the Sony Watchman, and then they made an actual watch with a television screen on it, and no one bought them. And so I guess people just don't want to watch. You know, like,
but that Nano watch was a hit.
That watch
was raised on Kickstarter.
That was raised on Kickstarter. They raised like $10 million. You know, it's just
that watch was a total hit. I mean, that sold like wildfire. Everybody's got a Nano on their watch, but you can't FaceTime on it.
I'm telling you.
I hear that Apple's coming out with a official. That's what I heard.
Mm-hmm.
That they're coming out with an official watch, an iPhone watch.
I would be interested to see if they did that.
Mm. You don't think?
I don't know. You know, it seems
really segmented for them.
It is very segmented, and Apple's typical model is that they
heard that at San Diego.
Maybe it's happening, but historically, if you look at the way Apple approaches their product development, with the exception of even with the Mac platform, they kind of hang back and wait to see if there's a potential market for something.
Yeah.
And then they kind of go in and perfect it with design. And that's sort of, you know, right. They obviously they didn't invent the MP3
Huge
player.
Apple
they
fan.
Didn't they
Huge.
Didn't invent the yeah. smartphone. You know, like they just saw that there was a market and then figured out. So because there isn't really a market for that thing, that kind of thing yet. But maybe they will. Maybe you're right. I just haven't heard anything about it.
I just want one.
You know? Once again, you may have to make this thing that you want.
LG, I think LG made one, but I don't,
Lucky
I don't
Gold Star.
I don't think it works. I think you need a special. I think you need another LG watch to see the FaceTime. But LG actually does have a watch came out like 3 or 4 years ago. That's it looks pretty cool too, and it's a you know smartphone on your watch, but it has a little camera, and they say you know you can make video calls.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, but I don't know if you can link it up with an iPhone.
Probably not.
It would give you a good excuse after a while to be like, I'm tired of talking at you. My arm is sore, and then you just kind of put your arm down and then hang up the phone. Man. Well, they do have the watch bands that hold up the nanos. Or the right.
Yeah.
So there is a version of that. It'd be interesting to see if they do that.
So the last thing, you guys are ready to wrap it up, right?
No, we're not in a hurry. We just always do. We always try to give the guests. We don't want to take advantage of their time. And the shows are about an hour, but they don't have to be exactly right. An hour.
Well, I wanted to say that, you know, speaking about doing crap by yourself and all that stuff, the latest thing that I'm going to put out, I think I'm going to try to put it out next week. But I'm a huge fan like many people from my generation, I'm a huge fan of the $6 Million Man.
Of course, Steve Austin,
and
a man barely alive.
So I have had this idea for a $6 Billion Man
sure.
movie forever. And I finally you know, it's like tied up, and it was going to be a Jim Carrey movie for a while. And
no, you got to be the guy.
This thing a bunch of times, and they've got so much money behind it or against it or whatever the script to get it going. But I said fuck it, and a little bit ago, I went and did something that in the commercial business they call it a rip-o-matic.
Okay.
And what you do is you tell the story that you want to tell by using clips from other movies.
Okay. Oh, interesting.
So I took about 30 films and combed through them, and commercials and music videos and, you know, anything that was on film that I could get my hands on. And I combed through it, and I created a $6 Billion Man movie trailer.
What the? Where is this? Where the fuck is this?
It's on his computer right now. It's sitting on his iMac.
Right now. Yeah. When does this thing air?
We'll put it up whenever it works best for you. We can put it up within.
Sooner than later. I've been better, I guess, right? When do they want it? When should we air it? What day is it?
Yes.
Right.
We should. You know what?
But anyway, I was thinking that maybe I could debut it on your. You guys have a,
we have
yes!
a YouTube channel.
Yes,
yeah.
Of course you can.
Yeah.
It's my channel, and I get to make those decisions. So of
well,
course you can.
I mean, it's a legendary entertainment channel, man.
Yeah, we get to run it independently. No, that's entirely the spirit of what we're talking about. I don't know. I think we should have a few chats off the podcast, because I think there's a lot of fun stuff for us to do. I love the idea of like, oh, you got a good idea. I would like to help facilitate making that happen, because that should just exist in the world. That's the best reason to do anything. It's just like, oh, I just want to see that.
That's right.
I just want to see that in the world.
Yeah. That's what the world is for.
Exactly.
That's why we were put here, people.
It's just to try stuff. But it's funny how people, they go, oh, we couldn't do that because we don't have that. And when you really think about it, it's like when you said, oh, you just wake up one day and you go, we could just shoot this thing this weekend. You really, that epiphany moment for people who want to be creators is so valuable and important.
Yeah.
When you finally just realize, oh, I guess I was just talking myself out of that for no reason, because I just assumed. There's this whole idea that I think was kind of given to us by maybe not so much our parents' generation, but certainly our grandparents' generation, where it's like, you know, the system is there to keep you down, keep your head down, just work a job you hate, and then retire when you're 60, 55 or whatever. And now
it's called the Industrial Revolution.
It is. I guess it is the Industrial Revolution. But now we don't have to live that way. And I think it's an important moment when people kind of realize that.
That's right. We're slowly starting to realize that we can change the whole world. You know, if nobody voted in November, change the world. And that's just by doing nothing.
At all.
Right? That's right. If nobody voted, then that vote would say, this system sucks and it needs to change.
But of course.
And that, and there are a lot of people that, you know, I mean, there's a lot of great ideas about how to change that system.
Two people voted, Mitt Romney and Barack Obama, but they voted for themselves.
You know? even if, say, you know, only 20% of the people that normally voted, voted, you know, then the message, even though you'd still have that president and all that shit would be status quo, but the message would be loud and clear. Wow, we can, and it wouldn't be to the government, it would be to the people.
Sure.
The message would be, we have the power to affect change here.
Yeah.
And that's, everybody feels disenfranchised. But the truth is, in this election year, we are not. That's a lie. It's
well,
a total lie.
But it's,
and the internet is scary, and they want to shut us down. They want to shut us down. And just keep that in the back of your mind. They are looking for reasons. And in fact, they just finally passed a bill that said, in an emergency situation, the government can take control of the internet. That's a law that they passed. That is a bullshit law that should not exist and that we let exist.
Well, I don't know how that's, exist? I don't know how that's enforceable since the internet's not just an American thing.
There's a kill switch.
Is a kill switch. The only way that you can keep the internet... Are you kidding? The only way you can keep the internet going is if you had your own Wi-Fi, which, by the way, they're working on. I forget the name of them, but they go around with little briefcases and they put up Wi-Fi systems on rooftops. That's
sure.
The only internet that would be up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, guaranteed. They can shut it down in a second.
South Korea just hit 100% Wi-Fi.
Good. Did they?
Them. Yeah.
This is a much smaller landmass, though.
So?
Well, I'm just saying.
Even that Wi-Fi they can shut down.
Yeah. I'm just saying, but they're also ahead
of us. But there are ways to make the internet unshutdownable, but we are not there.
No. Let's just focus on making cool movies right now.
Yeah.
And then I
make cool movies, and you could affect a revolution. You could change the world with a great movie.
Easy Rider.
Yeah.
Easy Rider ushered in a whole social revolution, or at least
thought you just nicknamed him Rider, and we're saying Easy Rider.
I mean, at the bottom of what everybody says is, you know, really, I mean, what really? I mean, we're just goofing around, you know, we're playing in the sandbox. It doesn't really mean anything, you know. At the end of the day, we're just bullshitting.
Sure.
It's not true. We're not just bullshitting.
No, people have a lot of power. Everyone has a lot of power.
In the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
Making movies, making music. You know, making podcasts. It's like you're actually, you know, have a lot. We have a lot more power than we, and it's a lot more meaningful than I think that we give it credence to. You know,
yeah.
Some of the most meaningful memories of my life has been experiences I've had watching great movies that changed the way I look at the world.
What do you think is what's your most influential film?
Porky's 2.
The next day.
Yeah, the next day.
Yep, because they had to deal with all of the aftermath.
He stuck his penis through that little hole.
Tommy Turner.
Yeah.
Yep, and then Miss Ballbricker. Yeah. And then it's all the fallout.
That was just kind of terrifying.
That's where we are culturally right now. It's Porky's 2 the next day. All the shit has gone down, and now Porky's going to get his revenge. Porky being the government. Porky's 2 is the most socially relevant film of our time.
Check it out.
Watch it, kids. You can see it's just laden with political imagery. It's the Nostradamus of our generation. It predicted everything. The market crash, the dot-com bubble. It's all in Porky's 2. Porky is the dot-com bubble.
I got gotcha.
Porky was God.
Oh. Porky
that
is the
totally
God
changes
particle.
Everything for me. Porky's the Higgs boson.
Yeah.
Porky was discovered at CERN. We've learned a lot of very important things today about Porky's too. My last question is, which I'm sure you get asked a lot, is the no shoes. You hate shoes.
Yeah, I don't like shoes.
How do you... I've always been curious, like...
Fair enough answer.
Because I see people walk around barefoot, I'm like, but there's glass on the ground, and people leave needles in places.
I don't think there's as much glass and needles on the ground as you think.
There's so many glasses and needles.
This is not 1978 Los Angeles.
It is 70...
Did your mom tell you that?
Yes.
I have never injured my foot, except for... And I've been walking around barefoot since I was a teenager. And people have been giving me shit about my shoes since I was a teenager.
You're a trailblazer.
And they hit that point where it's like, well, am I just going to put on shoes just because people, you know, are going to give me shit if I don't? You know, it becomes one of these weird, challenges in your life.
Sure.
Are you just going to do what you want to do?
Yeah.
And what you've always done? And
yeah.
Am I going to act like who I am? Or am I going to sort of, like, cow to the weird pressure of people just leave me alone?
I think it's an interesting social experiment because it really doesn't affect anyone.
Well,
but I would
have to think of it. I've walked around barefoot outside pretty extensively, and the only time I've ever hurt my foot has been in my own house, like stepping on a thumbtack or something.
But you know what's funny is, like, after a while, like, I can't remember the last time I stubbed my toe.
Right.
You know, you just kind
of you're more aware of your feet.
You're a little more aware.
Yeah.
And you know why I don't wear shoes is because it helps me stay aware, and not just of my feet. It helps me stay aware that I'm a human biological being. When you strap these, like, machine crafted objects onto your feet, my opinion is it separates you from the human animal that you are. You
know, but it makes me a little bit taller.
Come out of the dirt. You know, that's what we do. We've come out of the dirt, and we surround ourselves with all this glass and nice stuff, and we really try to forget the fact that we fart and shit and eat and fuck.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is,
I don't forget any of those things.
And
dirty
cuddle.
Animals.
We are filthy.
And filthy, dirty animal. And you know what? It's such a blissful feeling. You know, I could go on about other things that I don't do. But I'm not gonna do that.
I think that there is a message, that there's a consistent personality trait that you have that will, I hope, continue on this path of trying to blaze trails in new media and affecting the change that you have always wanted. And I think it starts with the not wearing shoes thing, where you're like, yeah, I don't fucking care if anyone... I do think it's funny. It's one of those things that, like I was about to say before, it doesn't really affect anyone, but I'm sure still people are like, what are you doing? Why can't you wear shoes like the rest of us?
Yeah, it does have...
You don't wear shoes, but you wear a hat? What's wrong with you?
Bitch, shoes are like hats for your feet. Why not some feet hats?
You'd be surprised what the reactions are. It's really kind of funny. And you're absolutely right. I mean, that's what it's all about, you know. It's finding that little cracks in the seams of what the things that we've been taught, the realities that we've been fed that aren't true. Find the cracks in those seams and break them apart, you know. Because if you find one crack somewhere, then you could tear down the whole fucking thing.
Well, the crack right now is in the entertainment industry with these kind of $20 to $30 million kind of true crime budget things, and I feel like we have a lot to talk about, so we should talk, and then you can come back on the podcast if you want, and like every so often I want to keep checking in with you and kind of seeing what sort of stuff you're into, because I was you know, maybe loosely aware that, like, oh, you know you're doing this comic imprint and then you directed this movie, but I didn't realize how deep it went, how much a part of the demographic you are, as opposed to just a performer. Like, you're in the community of people that you want to make stuff for, so which I think is very important. So I want to keep checking in with you every so often and just see how it's going and if there's anything we can do to help out.
Okay,
I think it'd be fun.
Sounds good.
So lastly, just plugs.
The beginning of a beautiful friendship.
This is a beautiful. So the Kickstarter page for Bad Planet, people should look at that. Ross, is it rawstudios.com?
Yep, rawstudios.
Rawstudios.com. And
check out our forum, too. We got a really great forum, and there's a great thread on there about Dirty Laundry and the Bad Planet video game. And there's a lot of great people on the forum. It's really cool. There's no flaming going on, but it's a lot of people. It's a really good forum. Very proud of those guys.
Good. Oh, it's hard to run a forum without trolls. That's a pretty amazing feat.
It really is, man. We got a bunch of people on there, and I don't know what is some kind of magic that we have. It's like hardly ever happens.
Well, we have the same effect on our website. If you get enough cool, nice people in the beginning, then they'll just kind of stamp it out before it gets out of control. And so it's sort of a lucky thing that happens, but it's we appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here, man. It was good talking to you. Really good talking to you.
Great. Thank you, Tom. Where's my cat? Is she's around?
She's right here. She's been asleep on the board. I've taken no less than 10 pictures of your adorable cat sleeping on the board, which I will probably post to Reddit later, because this is the kind of shit that Reddit loves.
Awesome.
So enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast was brought to you by Hover.com. Hover is domain name registration and management that is simple. For 10% off your new domain, go to HOVER.com/Nerdist.
Hey, you. It's Jason Bateman. Have you listened to Smartless? Smartless is the podcast that I host with my friends who are more like brothers. The super talented and funny Will Arnett and Sean Hayes is...
Why are you whispering?
Well, there's a pst in the copy.
But people are listening, so it's like...
They are listening. Like, okay.
Yeah.
In each episode of Smartless, one of us reveals our mystery guest to the other two. What ensues is a genuinely improvised and authentic conversation. Our mystery guests span our mystery... We'll cut this out. Our mystery guests... All right, here we go.
We got a lot of big famous people from different walks of life, and if you're a Wondery fan, then you're going to... Just
Neil
you come and listen
Tyson.
To it. Yeah. We're on Wondery right now, and you can listen to us. And no matter what you're doing, you're at the gym or you're in the car, just listen to the podcast.
Sean, tell them where they can find it.
Follow Smartless on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Smartless ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Bye.
Bye.